Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Mike Kosicki in a moment, but first, our play-by-play call of the day.
Drive, well hit right field, and that is going to untie the game. Pereira bangs it off the auxiliary scoreboard in straightaway right field. He's gone deep again. And with his third hit of the day, he's put the Phillies in front 4-3.
And that was in the bottom of the seventh inning. The Phillies won it 4-3 over the Cardinals. Scott Fransky with a call on the Phillies radio network and heard right here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Very pleased to bring in a guy that's going to go down, at least for me in my tenure here, as one of the favorite guys around here, and that is Mike Kosicki, now with the Miami Dolphins. Mike, how are you? It's great to have you with us.
Well, man, Steve, how's everything going, man? Thanks for having me on.
It's great to have you on. What is it like to sit there now knowing you're a professional?
Oh, man, I know it sounds cliche, but it's a dream come true, man. I've been working for this for a long time, and now to finally have this opportunity, I'm just trying to make the most of it.
Mike, after the bowl game, what was the balance for you in terms of keeping football skills relevant but also making sure you were combine ready?
Yeah, so I was training down in Pensacola, Florida at a training facility called Exos, and I actually got recommended to go there through Chris Godwin from the year before, and he kind of talked to me about it, and obviously his performance at the combine spoke for itself as well, and they just did a great job in terms of building your speed, your strength, getting your weight right, all that kind of stuff. And then they have segments throughout the day where you'd have a position coach come in and you'd get your football work in as well. So, it was a lot of work, but, something that, I had a lot of fun with.
When the Dolphins drafted you, right, and they called you, what did they tell you right away? Just that you were picked, or did they have a little more extensive conversation with you?
I saw the phone ring. It said, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and, I kind of knew right away, and obviously there was a lot of excitement. They said, we're going to make you a Miami Dolphin, man. We're so excited to have you. We got big plans for you, and we're excited to have you on board. And it was awesome. I had somebody that believed in me, and an organization that was going to put a lot of time and invest a lot in me to ultimately come in there and do what I know I'm capable of doing.
Mike, Adam Gase built a lot of that reputation by being the offensive coordinator when Peyton Manning was the quarterback with the Denver Broncos. Then, of course, he went on to become a head coach.
Yep.
What's the initial read that you have of him, especially considering how tight ends were used by him at different levels?
Yeah, Coach Gase is an unbelievable guy, both as a football coach and then as as a man. He's done a great job, helping me throughout this, the OTAs and the mini camp, helping me transition into being a professional. The offense that he runs and that, he brought into Miami, it's definitely tight end friendly. I'm happy to be a tight end in this offense. I think it's able to, use some of my skill set and, some of my abilities, being able to move around the field and create mismatches. And, the entire, coaching staff, the guys around, guys that are around me in the tight end room and, the offense side of the ball and, honestly, everybody, they're all great. Everybody's out there trying to help you, assisting you in any way you need. And I think that's kind of the team and the culture that, I'm happy to be a part of.
Mike, the chunk of your time at Penn State, Ricky Ronnie was your position coach. And then, of course, mm-hmm. The final game is the offensive coordinator, and Tyler Bowen was the assistant coach in charge of tight ends. What was it like for you to learn under Ricky Ronnie, and in the end, what did he mean to your development as a player?
Oh, yeah. Coach Ronnie was, everything in terms of, my development and, what he meant to me as a football player and as, a person and all that kind of stuff. He helped develop me on and off the field. And, you know, I'm so happy now that, you know, he's the offensive coordinator and, you know, got promoted and all that kind of stuff because, I mean, he's, you know, probably, you know, one of, if not, you know, the smartest coach on our staff. And, I'm so excited to just turn on the games and watch the games and, you know the play calls even before, you know, they're about to come out. And, just be a part of it. And then, you know, obviously, you know, he's going to do a phenomenal job. And, you know, I can't say enough about him. And, you know, I honestly, without a doubt, would not be, you know, where I am today without, you know, his coaching and his assistance for those last 2 years at Penn State.
And by the way, if you ever talk to Ricky Ronnie about Mike, he says, you have no idea how lucky I am to coach a guy like Mike Gesicki. So it runs both ways. It's true. Look, I got to see it every day, Mike. So, I mean, I know what you did. Believe me, everyone appreciates you coming here. Because I remember the night you verbally committed. And it was a Thursday night. And you're saying, how the heck does he remember that? Here's the reason why. Bill, we do the coaches show on Thursday night. Yep. Bill O'Brien was the coach at the time. He comes in and he says to me, and you know, Bill's not like usually doesn't say Steve or whatever. He goes, "Hey, Jonesy, I need a few minutes, Jonesy, at the top here." He says, "Could you kind of hold the fort? I got to take a phone call." I said, "Okay." So. I start the show and, usually I botch it up, the ratings fall, and then Bill comes in, the ratings go back up. So we go to a commercial break, and of course we cannot say that, because of rules, we can't say that it was you. And he leans over to me at a break, he says, between you and me, he says, "We got Gesicki." He says, "And we beat Ohio State to get him, Steve."
That's awesome. That is hilarious.
It's a true story. Man. That's how I found that. I mean, so I found out like 5 minutes after you called him because he told me in the commercial break he was excited. But then James had to re-recruit you. What did that take?
Honestly, not much. You know, I knew Coach Franklin. He offered me a Vanderbilt, so I knew that staff. And when they got the job, and they brought over the entire staff, it was honestly a no-brainer. He came over to one of my basketball games when I was in high school, and I got to know him and the staff and all that kind of stuff. And playing for Coach Franklin for the last 4 years was awesome. And he actually came out to one of my practices. The whole coaching staff was out at one of the practices a couple of weeks ago in Miami. So it was cool. You know, they were at a camp down there, and it was a great opportunity to see those guys and see those guys again. And it just kind of shows the family and, the brotherhood at Penn State.
And in high school, you played basketball, and you were Player of the Year twice. You also played volleyball. And I watched what I thought was a great conversation last night on MLB Network. It was Greg Amsinger along with Joe Girardi and Jim Thome. And they were talking at one point about, do you encourage your children to play other sports? And the two of them were, absolutely you do. What did it mean to you, and in some ways did it help you play other sports in high school?
Oh, I mean, I would suggest to any young kid out there, play as many sports as you can. It's only going to help you become a better athlete. If you kind of specialize in one, then you're missing the traits from the other sports. I think, one of my best qualities in football is being able to high point the ball and, go up and get it. Where other guys can't. And I think that comes a lot from basketball, going up for a rebound, or volleyball, going up for a big block or a spike. So I think that all my sports kind of help, transform me into the athlete that I am today. And that helps me, take advantage of my size and my speed on the football field.
We mentioned your recruitment. You came to Penn State at a time where it might have been difficult for people to come to Penn State. You did. You stayed, and ended up winning a Big Ten championship and a Fiesta Bowl championship in conjunction with the fifth-year players and the four-year seniors that you were with, your class. How much satisfaction did you walk out with as to where you placed Penn State?
Oh, it's awesome. Going to Penn State, like you said, it was at a time where not too many people believed in Penn State. It was more of a tougher time. People wanted to call it a rebuilding, all that kind of stuff. And we were able to, with help of my freshman year, we had guys on that team like a Mike Hull, and then you know, in my sophomore year, you know, we had some older guys that still kind of kept the program afloat. And then finally, you know, my junior and senior year, it was awesome. I mean, it was kind of the storybook ending, all that kind of stuff. We were able to get a Big Ten championship, Fiesta Bowl, you know, back-to-back 11-win seasons, all that kind of stuff. And just kind of, you know, get Penn State, you know, rolling back in the direction where it belongs. And, you know, with the recruiting that, you know, Coach Franklin does and, you know, the talent that's at Penn State right now, I think, you know, Penn State's just only going to continue to, you know, be on a steady incline from here on out.
All right, new program, that means new playbook. What does it take for you to start getting a grasp on the playbook the Dolphins want to run?
Yeah, so it's definitely a little bit more complex than what we run at Penn State. You know, the terminology is a little bit different. Some of it's more, you know, a little bit more lengthy than, you know, a play call in college. But just like anything else, it's just repetition. You know, the more times you run through it, the more times you get a physical rep at it, you hear it in the huddle. You know, it's all starting to come together. And it was good to have OTAs in the mini camp before actual training camp starts in about a month, just because, you know, that was kind of the first time going through it. You kind of got the mistakes out of the way. You got the, you know, all the learning out of the way. And now, you know, you come through and you go through it a second time, and things will be coming faster, a whole lot of less thinking, and just playing faster and playing confident.
What kind of read do you have? I mean, you had great rapport with Trace McSorley, also with with what you did with Christian, you did with Tommy Stevens as well. What kind of feel do you have so far with Ryan Tannehill?
Oh yeah, Ryan's a great guy. You know, he's a guy that, you know, pulled me aside during practice and just kind of, you know, coached me up on a route. You know, he'll teach me, you know, something new every day. And he's a guy that, you know, has a great touch on the football. You know, he has, you know, it's just so easy to catch the ball when it's coming from him. He's such a great touch on the ball, and you know, puts in the right spot. And I mean, honestly, I'm really excited just to continue to develop and, you know, kind of be a target for him moving forward.
Is it a feeling down there, Mike, that the Dolphins are close to a breakthrough and that you're entering at a great time?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I mean, you look at it, you know, 2 years ago they made the playoffs, and then last year, you know, obviously Ryan got hurt, so I think that, you know, kind of, you know, just hurt the mojo a little bit. And, you know, now that he's back and, you know, they kind of, you know, get starting to put some pieces together, it's definitely an exciting time to be part of this program. You know, very similar to, you know, kind of a little journey at Penn State, you know, so I'm excited for the future in Miami, you know, playing for the Dolphins. And, I mean, I think that the future is definitely bright.
Mike, I want to thank you for the time, and I know that you're going to be around here a lot, because it was interesting watching you in the spring. You're actually taking time coaching up tight ends in the spring every once in a while. You'd stop by the sideline and say, well, you should have done this and this. Suddenly, Mike Kosicki's become a coach.
Yeah, man. I love getting back into State College, man. So anytime that I can, and, you know, anytime I can help somebody, I'm always looking forward to that.
You will always go down in this book here as one of the best I've ever seen here at Penn State. I appreciate the time very much. My best to your family, because your parents, you couldn't ask for nicer people. I appreciate them very much and you. Thanks, Mike.
All right, Steve. Thank you very much for having me on, man.
Mike Kosicki of the Miami Dolphins. He put together a great record-setting career here at Penn State. And you have a feeling that Mike Kosicki is going to put together an outstanding NFL career, starting with the Miami Dolphins. All right, next half hour, Frank Bodani, York Daily Record. Then tomorrow, we've got Paul Alexander on the show. And just got this word here, Rich Scarsella is going to join us tomorrow. All right. And then there's my brother. See, Matt, you get a dose of my brother for the second straight week.
That's right. Always look forward to that.
Oh, no, no, no. He puts me in my place every time.
And are we still doing trivia?
Oh, yeah. Let's do trivia tomorrow. That'll be a lot of fun.
Well, all right. I'll come prepared.
We'll come up with some suit trivia tomorrow. That'll be great. You get so nervous every time I mention that. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Our thanks to Mike Kosicki, who took time out of his schedule to talk with us today from Florida. Now a member of the Miami Dolphins, officially signing his contract with them. And I think Mike's going to have a bright career. I think in Adam Gay's offense, if you notice, you know, obviously there's the Bears, but notice what he did with the Denver Broncos offense and how he utilized tight ends and how Peyton Manning used tight ends. And please don't get into this. This is where you make it. This is where I think fans make a big mistake. Obviously, you see great talent out there and so forth, but you know, fans are very savvy. They understand things, but here's one that they don't quite understand. I think the way players are built up in the media sometimes, you think they do that they're superhuman and they take care of everything, and you know, like Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, and they don't need to be coached. When in reality, it's 180 of that. The great ones are the ones that want to be coached. The number of times you heard Peyton Manning compliment, and you notice how he never complimented Adam Gase or Adam, he always complimented Coach Gase. Right? Always. And that's because he was implementing the offense that Adam Gase put in Denver, which was a heavily used tight ends. Well, Adam Gase now, that's why they drafted Mike. He wanted to get a tight end in that made his type of offense go. That's why I think Mike's got a great opportunity in Miami because of who's coaching it. Now, Ryan Tannehill's got a big bounce back season coming up too for him after getting hurt last year. So you've got a determined quarterback who now knows he has a valuable tight end slot receiving weapon that's got size that's difficult for a linebacker to keep up with and is also too tall for a safety. Matchups. Matchups, matchups, matchups. Sometime you should check out, and I think it was SEC Storied on Peyton Manning's comeback, and a lot of inside film that was used for the documentary showing him going to David Cutcliffe, the head coach at Duke, and he was Peyton Manning's offensive coordinator at Tennessee, going down there and them going over film, going over drills and so forth. Eli Manning was a part of it as well. Several other pro players came down. Wes Welker went down there, among others. But it shows you the value of coaching and what these guys can do. And the good ones, and Brady's one of them, want to be coached. They want to be coached. They know they don't have all the answers. There's a certain segment, though, that the things, oh, they've got all the answers. And the interesting part is, it's the player that doesn't think the same way as you do.
I don't have all the answers. I need to be coached.
And Mike will do well down there. No question about that. The Phillies, big win yesterday over the Cardinals. They are back in action tonight as they continue on. And how about Croatia beat Argentina today? Messi's in trouble, man.
That was atrocious by Argentina. They have been awful. There's been a lot of surprises. This has been actually a fun World Cup despite the U.S. not in it because of all the surprises we've had so far.
Yeah, it's kind of tough, though, with the hours of it. You know, it's so far ahead. And Fox is doing the right thing. They're airing things live. They aren't doing it on tape. I mean, Fox is taking the right approach. You know, on FS1, they're airing it live. It just turns out here in the East Coast, I mean, you know, if you like to watch your sports in the morning, you can do it. I mean, you got to really watch it in the morning when it's out on the West Coast. Wow. Let's see.
By the way, Phillies tomorrow night.
Yeah, tomorrow night. The Red Sox beat the Twins 9-2. Yankees beat Seattle 4-3. Colorado leads the Mets 5-2 in the bottom of the fourth inning. The Pirates play tonight, Matt. They've got Arizona tonight.
The D-backs spanked them out in Arizona just not too long ago. So big series for the Pirates to try and right the ship.
Pirates are they're very,
no pun intended, by the way.
I mean, but there's, you know what? There's really nobody that can get a handle on them.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah. I don't think anybody knows, including them, whether they're good or bad.
I think they know who. I think they're not a good baseball team, and it's finally starting to level off after that hot start that they had.
Right. I mean, I think everybody. This series here will tell you something, I think. All right. 1.5 hour left.
Sunbury Motors needs your truck. Whether it's a Ford, Chevy, Dodge, or even an import, SFC will give you the most money for your truck. Period. Sunbury Motors is going to make it easier for you to trade, too, with a selection of over 125 new Ford trucks with savings up to $13,650. New 2018 Ford F-150s start as low as $25,993. And SFC has four city blocks of new trucks to choose from. New arrivals include four special edition 2018 Ford Raptors and the all-new blacked-out 2018 F-250 Terminator.
A must-see!
The 2018 Ford F-150 is Motor Trend's Truck of the Year and has been America's best-selling truck for 41 consecutive years.
One is sold every 39 seconds.
Sunbury Motors has an awesome selection, including regular cabs, Super Cruise, with STX, XLT, Lariat, and King Ranch trucks clearly marked with blowout prices. See why SMC is Central Pennsylvania's Ford Truck Capital. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great pleasure to have you with us today. Our thanks to Mike Kosicki, who joined us in the previous half hour from Florida. Mike has signed his contract with the Miami Dolphins. You can check out the interview in case you missed it on stevejonesshow.com on the podcast. In the 3:30 half hour, Pete Jensen, NHL.com, joined us. Coming up tomorrow, Rich Scarcella, Reading Eagle, will join us. Also tomorrow, Paul Alexander from Pittsburgh and the Oracle from the East will join us at 4:35. That would be my brother, Matt.
Yes,
not the guy, not the mystic of Danville.
Now that's something nobody's described him as before.
Well, it'll be the last time. Hey, we'll just give him the disparaging name, the suit. He's your guy, I can tell. I can't say anything disparaging around you when it comes to him. You're behind him all the way. I think it's just personally fear. Let me, during the course of the commercial break, tell you there's nothing to fear. At all. All right. Let's bring in one of the greats, Frank Bodani, York Daily Record. Frank, first of all, welcome. Great to have you with us. I know you made your way yesterday to Hershey. The Penn State football players and James Franklin were down there yesterday for a visit to the Hershey Medical Center. Talk with children and so forth. It works a couple of ways. Obviously, it means a lot to the families and to the children. But here's the other part. What else? What does it mean for the players themselves, and what did they get out of it that actually makes them better men?
Oh, I think the fans love it. I mean, the parents, well, the kids, obviously, but I mean, the parents of the kids. It's one of the few chances that they get to meet the guys they love, watch on TV, maybe see at the games up close and personal without the helmets and the pads on, get to talk a little bit. I mean, you don't really get that many chances, right, to do that with a team like Penn State or Ohio State or Alabama. And getting autographs at the blue-white game might be one of those. This is another. Mm-hmm. And most part, kids sometimes need a little bit of leading to go do something like this. You probably remember when you're 19 years old, right?
It's a distant memory, for sure.
It's a good experience. Stop thinking about yourself for a day in the summer and think about somebody else, right? Got to be good for everybody.
The new rules that they're putting in this year, one is, for example, you can play up to four games, and the four games can be anywhere in the schedule and still retain your eligibility for that particular season. What is your rule?
It's really good for the flexibility for coaching staff and for players. I mean, you know, a lot of these kids, you don't always know as coaches or as you're rooting maybe as fans or the play. And once you make the decision, it was always, man, we're done, right? I mean, it's sink or swim. Now you get to have a little bit of leeway with a guy like, say, I don't know, maybe Ricky Slade is good enough to play no matter what. Hey, now you get a chance to play a new kid like that, maybe at the beginning of the year, see how he does, how the depth chart is, and then you can pull him back suddenly if something doesn't go right, you don't need him. He's still got his whole year. I mean, maybe they would have did that with Miles Sanders a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And then to me, the other intriguing thing is the end of the year, right? So you have a well, and at the end of the year, you got a shot to play him, maybe games, a bowl game. Will Fries comes to mind in the end of a couple of years ago, and then still have that.
If I'll give you another one. Remember, Frank, how often we heard James Franklin grapple a bit about Ryan Bates in his freshman year? And they ended up not playing him. And you would think that under the current rule, that might be a guy, like, let's throw him in here a couple of games and see how he does, because you and I heard him openly say that he was kind of grappling as to what to do with him.
Yes, absolutely. So there's all, I think every team, Penn State, is going to have maybe five or six guys. You're going to have, like, freshmen that come in that are definitely going to redshirt. Some probably are definitely going to play, and a whole bunch in between.
Yeah, and then some that just aren't ready, so they're not going to play.
Right, right. So those aren't the ones you worry about or are concerned, but this will help the in-between guys. And not only just because they may not be good enough to play, maybe just be at the position they're at or not sure if they need them right away there or so it'll be interesting. Another storyline to follow, which I think would be pretty cool.
Can this put, and I'm not just thinking about Penn State here, I'm thinking about college football in general, can this put some maybe added juice into bowl games because we might see some freshmen play?
Oh yeah, that's what I thought. That's the second whole part of this, end of the season, you know, when a guy's developed in practice, but he hasn't played, and he's ready to go. And you have that, you know, the bowl game's almost like a second season anyway with the break. Here's a guy who might really be ready and could help you win a bowl game, whereas before you wouldn't get a chance to see that guy. Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I can't think who might have helped Penn State in the Fiesta Bowl last year off the top of my head. But,
no.
But it could. It could be a situation like that, especially if one of your starters gets hurt, the last game of the regular season or second to last game, maybe you have an answer now.
Right.
Different answer.
Right, exactly. Live for Life will be coming up. It'll be earlier this year. It's going to be on June 30th. It's a week from Saturday. What do you usually get out of that?
It's another, I guess in a way, I mean, it's been going on for a lot of years and great publicity. Again, another chance for fans to get a little bit of a closer view. It's, it's a way for another development for the players, because they're not just working out. They're not just competing. It's a much bigger goal and much bigger means in mind, It's a lot of things coming together. So, it's a good competition / learning experience, thinking about some other people for situations than you. Good for the fans, it's one of those,
right?
Here's a handful of things here, it kind of works out for everybody.
Exactly.
For the media, it's for, if you, for us it's sometimes a little difficult because a few interviews or such, but Dwight Gault's always pretty good, so.
Yeah, he's always really good, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
The other one is the transfer rule that is going into effect on October 15th, where the player no longer has to ask or the athletic department for permission to transfer. Mm-hmm. Now, doesn't mean you can't walk in there and say, I want to transfer, and say, hey, can we talk about this for a second? But within 48 hours after the player makes their final decision, they have to be on the, for lack of a better term, transfer wire. A database, transfer database. What's your thought on that?
I don't know. I don't know how. here's the first thing. I'm not sure how much it's going to really affect Penn State.
Right.
Penn State doesn't seemingly take in a lot of transfers. They don't have a lot of players who are marquee names in the least bit leave.
Right.
So guys who leave transfer from Penn State tip are guys that just aren't working out, aren't seeing playing time. They're not, you know, they're not big name guys. So first of all, I don't know how much it's going to affect Penn State. But you know what? I mean, if you're a student, you go to school, you're free to go wherever you want if you leave, if you don't play sports like this. I don't know. I mean, I guess I can see it. You don't want to get into a trading war with, I don't like this, I'm going to up and, you know, it certainly doesn't teach kids to maybe think through their options a little bit. You know, you make a decision, you got to be upheld to that big decision in your life. But, I mean, they can leave. It just gives them maybe the, you know, maybe you could convince me to finally give them the ability to actually do what they want.
And you and I both know right now in college basketball, you'll get between 700 and 800 transfers in any given year. That's about two per program. And in college football, the list is so much smaller than that. It doesn't really affect college football. At least transfers have not affected college football as much as basketball.
No, and grad transfers seemingly maybe have recently, but I don't.
Yeah,
those kids can go, have already been able to go where they want, right?
Right, I mean, exactly.
And those, are to me, are the biggest ones because they can play right away in marquee positions that you know about, like quarterback. So,
what do you think of the kickoff rule where now you can call a catch inside the 25-yard line and have the ball brought out to the 25?
Gosh, you know what? That's the strangest one of them all because, to me, you'd think that you'd be guaranteed to have a guy back there who you feel comfortable can take the ball past the 20 steps.
Right.
But you got to feel comfortable, right? I think Penn State fans have been wondering before Saquon Barkley, who was, you know, why haven't we had one of those guys that you could count on all the time, right? More so.
Right.
But there should be a guy. I don't know. I guess that's a strange, a little strange to me because I'm thinking unless you're fielding in the end zone, wouldn't you return everyone back?
Well, I mean, can you imagine? Let's just take a player, Journey Brown. Say Journey Brown is a guy that they consider putting back on kickoffs. Can you imagine Journey Brown fair catching? He wants to take and serve any way he can do.
I can't imagine most anyone fair catching a kickoff.
You're
only getting it to 25, right?
Right. Here's an up guy. Say Koa Farmer. Can you imagine Koa? Because you know Koa. Can you imagine Koa Farmer fair catching?
No, because most of the kicks that the guys wouldn't return probably around the 25 or worse. I mean, they're not, you know what I mean? If you're getting a guy that's really not going to run with it, is he really catching it deeper than the 25 to begin with?
I mean,
I don't know. That's a strange one. I'm not going to lose too much time thinking about
it. I will find it interesting because one of the first teams to do this, and this is before James got here, was Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer did not want touchbacks. He wanted his kickers to get the ball down to about the 2-yard line. He covers, half to 2/3 of the field. And the idea was, we'll stop you at the 17, and for us, that's a win of plus 8 yards. Well, I guess now you can fair catch it, but I'm with you. I can't say I'm going to fit. I don't see it.
I want my kicker going, kicking it through the end zone every single time.
Yeah.
No kicking it at trying to 3. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. When Joey Julius was putting the ball through the end zone every time, to me, there was a different emotion about that play. And it was a security about that play, you know? I mean, that's
the... See, that point, the security of the play. I mean, if you get touchbacks, all right, you're like, okay, 25. They gain nothing out.
You want to play, and it doesn't matter who, they can have the best returner back there in the world. You can't do nothing.
Right.
Barkley could take a ball from the end zone for a touchdown, for example. He can if you kick it through the end zone.
Well, I'd like to point out that Ohio State against Penn State did kick the ball to the 3 to open the game, which is what they wanted. Unfortunately for them, 97 yards later, Penn State was winning.
Yeah, and that was just a really, I mean... poorly covered, but it was even close to. Was that the easiest 97-year-old kickoff return you've ever seen?
pretty close. He was. I don't think he was ever touched.
Quality opponent.
Yeah. So. I don't think he was ever touched.
No, it was not touched.
No. Frank, it's always a pleasure. It's great to hear you.
Yeah. All the best, man. Enjoy the beginning of the summer here. We'll hope to see you.
Frank Bodani, York Daily Record. Tomorrow, Rich Scarcella, Reading Eagle. Also tomorrow, Paul Alexander. Our thanks to Frank Bodani, Mike Gesicki, Pete Jensen. We'll come back, wrap it up in a moment. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, wrapping up items for today. NBA draft is tonight. Expect DeAndre Ayton to be the first overall pick. And, yeah, I mean, I think there's going to be the usual suspects in the first 10 picks. I mean, you're going to see Doncic, Bagley, Carter, Porter, Young. You know, they'll all be picked. Maybe Mikal Bridges will be the 10th pick.
I hope so for the Sixers.
Yeah.
I want him in a Sixer uniform badly. And I also want Jalen Brunson in a Sixer uniform when the Sixers pick at 26 if they stay there.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, for good teams, this will be a chance for them to get deeper and a little bit better. For mediocre teams, I can predict that a year from now when we're doing this show, you will still be mediocre, despite what you do today.
Yeah, like this, other than maybe number one, I don't think any of these players are really worth trading up for.
No, they're not players worth trading up for. I mean, look, this is where Danny Ainge did a brilliant job with the Celtics. He was able to wheel and deal and end up with back-to-back third overall picks. One was Jaylen Brown. And then the other one, he actually had the first overall pick last year, and he intended on taking Jason Tatum the entire time. And as you recall in the show last year, leading up to the draft, they're like, oh, they're going to take Fulton. And I said, take Jason Tatum. How many times did I say, the Celtics should take Jason Tatum?
And look at where the Celtics are and where the Sixers are.
Right? Well, they flipped spots.
Right.
And the Sixers took Fultz, which is fine. Fultz could end up being a terrific player. But I was big on Jason Tatum. And I thought, well, geez, even at three, they can still get Tatum. The Sixers aren't going to take Tatum. And what happened was is Tatum was able to excel going to a good team. Because remember, the Celtics were in the Eastern Conference Final last year. So it wasn't as if he was going to the Little Sisters of the Poor. So Tatum ends up going to a good team, and guess what? He's a really good player that really helped out a good team. Now, if Jason Tatum were to have gone to, say, the Phoenix Suns, right now he would be playing in obscurity because the Suns just aren't good enough to get themselves in a position to challenge just yet. Now, they are the youngest team in the NBA. In fact, they might be the youngest team in sports. And slowly but surely, and Ayton's the next piece, they'll get better, but they have to do it in pieces. Anthony Davis is a fabulous player. I think we can all agree. Anthony Davis, he can pass, he can shoot, he runs the floor, he rebounds. I mean, people forget that when he was in high school, he was 6'2", 6'3", and he was a point guard. Well, then he grew to be a 6'11 guy, and he still maintained his point guard skills. As outstanding as he is, it took them years to make the playoffs with him. And he's really good. I mean, he's better than any player in this draft. I'm talking about at the age of 19. If they drafted tonight, he would be the obvious first overall pick. And that has nothing to do with, oh, we've already seen his NBA body of work. Look, I'm going back to that night when they picked him. I mean, I saw him play in college in person.
Matt, my goodness. You want to talk about a cut above. He's fabulous. But even as a guy that entered the NBA as a really good player, and he's better than anybody in this draft, it still took New Orleans years to get to the playoffs, and the first time they got in was as an 8 seed. So it just takes time. You can't, in the NBA, you would think in the NBA with 5 starters that one player could change everything for you. And the reality is one player gets you on the road to changing things. It took the Bulls years, right, after they drafted Michael Jordan to finally put enough around him to win. It took a few years for LeBron James before they got people around him before he won. Then, of course, then he really won when he went to Miami and joined other older players who were stars. It's just the way it took years for Kobe Bryant. It was not out of the gate for Shaq and Penny Hardaway right away, and then finally things came together for them. It's just the way it is. Now, Magic came in and won right away, but Magic came in and won right away. He had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Right? Like, if I had to pick a player that came in and made his team automatically good the second he walked out there, I mean really good, you're going to find this interesting, Matt. Larry Bird. Do you know how bad the Celtics were when Bird joined them? And the Celtics drafted Bird a year earlier. Bird played his senior season at Indiana State, already drafted by the Celtics.
That I didn't know.
Yeah. Hmm. And the Celtics won like 28, 29 games. Right? Bird's rookie season. And Bird's rookie season, they won 60 games.
And plenty of championships.
And they won 3. They won 3 with Bird there. I can assure you in no uncertain terms, there are absolutely no Larry Birds in this draft.